Get ready, get comfy for the next Nonprofit Insider Podcast episode.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. I am your host, Swim Kareem, and we are fully loaded today. We have a great episode in store for you nonprofit enthusiasts. You are in the right place. Trust me, we have an array of amazing topics. I'm going to talk about that here in a little bit. First, be sure, if you haven't done it already, you got to say it all the time, but we got to say it. Be sure to follow us on Instagram. Be sure to follow us on TikTok. I know my TikTok game's been lacking lately. I've been spending a lot of my time just on Instagram. But I gotta put more TikToks, because it seems like all the millennials, the elder millennials, are just staying on Instagram while the young folks are on TikTok. But I'm gonna step my game up a little bit. One of the things is I'm now going to 2 episodes a week. If you know, for that first quarter, the first 3 months, I was going every single week with an episode. Had to slow down a little bit. Capitalism was kicking my ass. And so I was doing a lot of episodes. And I was like, listen, sometimes you really do got to take a break, even in this hustle culture, even when you're trying to get your dreams a reality. And I've had people reaching out to me. So things are going in the right direction, but sometimes you got to take a break, know where your limits are. And I want to give you all some really good episodes like the one we got going on today. So follow us on Instagram, follow us on TikTok. Go back to the previous episode. I did an uncut series where I talked about, actually, it's funny because I'm sitting here, I'm like, I know I had it in my notes, nonprofit waste, this is what it is. I talked about nonprofit waste in the previous episode, 19 minutes, get you in and out. And of course, the episode before that, I did an interview with the executive director and founding principal officer of Learner's Chest Academy, Victor Lopez, some really, really good stuff. So go back, listen to the previous episodes, check us out. And one of the things is, it's been a while since we had a classic nonprofit insider episode, segment style episode where we have a new section, we have a main topic, and then we have like a horror story or a rapid fires book. We are back to that for today's episode. And that's one of the reasons I was like, you know what? I miss kind of doing it in this fashion. It's like the evening news, you know? What's your headliner? And then you kind of go into all the other feel-good things. So I have a good episode for you all today. I'm going to be talking about, for our news section here in about 3-4 minutes, the NRA. I had mentioned in a previous episode that, what episode was, I think it was episode 32, about 4 months ago, back in January, actually, I was like, you know what, the NRA, Wayne LaPierre was on trial, was on a civil trial. I wanted to be able to talk about that. The results came back relatively fast, like 6 weeks after. So I'm going to talk about that. One of the nonprofits that's been in the news a lot lately that I want to profile is World Central Kitchen. I'm going to talk about that in the B block as the main episode segment. I think you all are really going to appreciate that. Some really good insights, because listen, on the international stage, there's really nothing that compares to Israel, Palestine, Gaza, Hamas, and all the things that come with it. It can be a tough subject to really talk about on a public forum, but I'm going to attempt to kind of talk some aspects, and I want to specialize on World Central Kitchen, so stay tuned for that. And then in today's rapid fire books, I'm actually going to talk about a book that you all would probably never imagine, but a collection of poems by Megan Fox, and a book she had came out in 2023 called Pretty Boys Are Poisonous. I think the book came out specifically, I think, in August of 2023. Had a chance to pick it up at the library. The book is pretty darn good. I'm going to talk about that probably in the final 5-10 minutes, so stay tuned for that. Let me make sure I'm not missing anything. Is there anything else I'm missing? Oh, one thing. Here's a little tip. Here's a little inside sneak tip for you all. Episode 43, the episode dropping 2 weeks from this episode, I'm going to tell you, sneak in on this. I think you all want to listen to this. I'm going to have a special episode dropping May 1st where I talk about the Met Gala. a lot of people know the Met Gala for fashion, celebrities, and even a good portion of us know it as a fundraising opportunity. But I'm going to dive deeper into the Met Gala and some of the nonprofit ramifications behind it. The Met Gala is always the first Monday of May, so it's perfect timing that 5 days before I have an episode dropping and I am going to talk about the Met Gala. So you want to be sure to subscribe to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast on Apple or Spotify. Keep up with what we're doing so you can listen to the episode. All right, I think that's it. Let's hop to it. But real fast, the weather is getting so good. Here in Albuquerque, we have this thing called the windy season, where like it just all of a sudden in the spring it gets very, very windy. Dust can fly everywhere and you're just like, oh my gosh, there's so much dust. But getting outside when the weather is nice, the sun is out, we've been cooped up doing wintertime stuff, and it's so nice to get outside. And look, you're looking for something to do, right? Maybe you just don't want to go out to the bar and drink, or maybe you don't want to spend a whole lot of money to go to a festival, but you want to get out and be around community. That's where Duke City Story Slam comes in. Duke City Story Slam is Albuquerque's only storytelling competition where you get to hear real life stories from real life people in the community in a fun and friendly environment every other month. Each event features three feature tellers that share stories from their personal life in about 10 minutes or less. And if you have a story you want to share, they have an open mic section for the community, so you have the ability to share a story from your world based off that theme. And they meet every other week, and the next one we have coming up is going to be in May. We want to be able to see you there. We meet every other month at Canteen Brewhouse, and we want to be able to see you there. Go to the show notes to learn more about how you can participate in the next Duke City Story Slam. Get outside, enjoy the weather, and hear some local stories from members of your community. All right, and we're back. And one of the things about 3 months ago, I think it was 3 months ago to this day, episode 32, I released the Nonprofit Uncut series where I talked about the organization, the NRA. If you live in America and you're over the age of basically 15, 16 years old, you know the NRA. You've heard of the NRA, National Rifle Association. And as an organization, in the late 90s, 2000s, and honestly, even in part of the mid-2000s, they had a stronghold as probably one of the most aggressive, well-known nonprofit lobby groups. And so one of the things with the NRA is they are a 501c4 organization. They have a 501c3 foundation, but their main component is a 501c4. And with the NRA, they had such amazing power in Washington, D.C. And with the number of mass shootings and conversations around guns and the Second Amendment, the NRA was at the centerpiece, and they put themselves at the centerpiece of a lot of conversations in America. I had talked about in that episode back in January that Wayne LaPierre, he had just recently resignated. It was like the first week of January, because he was being sued by the Attorney General of New York, Lynetta James. She's also someone, she brought cases against Andrew Cuomo. She brought cases currently against former President Donald Trump. So she is an Attorney General. I imagine she's going to be on the national stage, especially depending on how these next two presidential elections go. And so she brought a civil trial against Wayne LaPierre and the NRA, in which they were eventually, after a six-week trial, they were found liable in that civil corruption case. The trial was 6 weeks. The jury decided in 1 week that Wayne LaPierre and the NRA were, I guess, not necessarily guilty. That's not the right word, but they were found liable for basically using the funds of this nonprofit, because that's what the NRA is, they're a nonprofit, of using the funds from the organization for personal use and not having enough oversight with their particular organization. I wanted to come back on this, and listen, give me 6-7 minutes here on this, because one of the things in the nonprofit space is that in order to get a nonprofit status, you have to go through the IRS. And look, at its core, we all know that, but it's easy to forget. It's easy to forget. You go to the federal level. You go to some of the highest levels. And sometimes states can say, hey, you all are doing some really shady stuff with your nonprofit. This isn't something where you go to your local county and say, hey, I want to start something big. No. In order to prevent your organization from having or to skirt around federal taxes, you're going to the feds. You're going to the highest level. And this is a reminder that the NRA, as a 501c4 organization, as one of the most well-known nonprofits in America, a lot of people may not realize that. Most of the time when people think of a nonprofit, they think of the likes of Feeding America, United Way, Habitat for Humanity, which, funny enough, Jimmy Carter is still alive. He's 99. I'm like, didn't he die already? He's still alive, so he's going to make it to 100 at this rate. So they think of like those United Ways, Habitat for Humanities, but the NRA is up there. And nonprofits, whether they're a 501c3, a 501c4, a 501c6, I'm going to talk about a 501c6 here in about 2 minutes, they are at the fabric of society, and the federal government has basically given the power to the IRS to allow nonprofits to serve in that role. With all that said, this verdict is not surprising. And the verdict came out back in February. So again, I'm a little late, but I wanted to be sure to come to this. The verdict is not surprising. And here's the thing. The gun part of the NRA is what makes the NRA and this topic as a whole a hot topic. But if you strip away the name, if you strip away the mission, if you strip away the tactics that are associated with the NRA and what they did under the CEO's reign, Wayne LaPierre's reign, if you take away all of that stuff and look at this and look at it in this light, look at it like this. If I came to you and I said, hey, listen, there is a nonprofit and many of the top members of this nonprofit are misusing funds for massive personal gain. They're using that to take trips to Jamaica. They're taking private planes. I mean, this nonprofit brings in tens upon hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're using the money from people that give to the organization for their own personal gain. If I said it like that, you would say, that's not a nonprofit I'd want to give my money to. If you replace the NRA, again, take out the name, take out the mission, and replace it with any other nonprofit, it might not make national news. And it might not make national news to disagree. But when it was the NRA, and since it is the NRA, it is a big deal. And that's the reason, honestly, that's why I'm talking about it, right? If it was a nonprofit that wasn't the NRA, but had just as much money, like if you look at the 990s and the money was exactly the same, it might not make that big of a stink, and the attorney general might not be so big on it. But the NRA, listen, they bore it upon themselves. They rose hard. They fundraised hard. They traveled to the sun, and eventually they got burned. And so it cost them in this particular verdict. And listen, it's part of why this verdict is not surprising, because I know when communicating with folks in the nonprofit space, and just honestly just doing reading on individual nonprofit space, listening to other nonprofits, specifically in the gun and the firearm world, I know a lot of people in the gun and firearm space that really did not like the NRA. They wanted Wayne LaPierre to go. They don't like the board setup. And so there's a lot of aspects to the NRA where they're losing a lot of money, a lot of revenue, a lot of membership. And the people that support what the NRA is supposed to be about, people that will be considered more right-leaning, more firearm-leaning, more conservative, they were like, fuck this organization, because they didn't like it. And that's an example of how in the nonprofit space, it doesn't really matter if you're on the right or the left. If I give you my money and I feel like you're not using my money, that I, even if it's just $100 a year, and I find out you're using a percent of that money to go to trips to go on shopping sprees with your wife. It doesn't matter if I voted for Trump or Biden. Fuck that and fuck you. I'm not about it. And so there are a lot of people that are very happy that this is happening. And look, I think there's two takeaways. And I want you to hear it here first. There will be a new top dog in the nonprofit space when it comes to guns and gun rights in the next decade. I guarantee it. I think for the next 4 or 5 years, a lot of these organizations to the everyday public are going to go, they're not going to be as well known. But I think in the next 5 to 10 years, in the next decade, we're going to have some real heavy hitters that are going to take over the top space when it comes to guns over NRA. And here are the two that I'm looking at. One, I'm hearing a lot about Gun Owners of America. Gun Owners of America. They are a 501c4, so they're in a very similar corporation-style structure, organization-style structure to that of the NRA, where they have people that are like member style to it and pay into it and things like that. And they use it to lobby and do things like that, even though a lot of it's not tax deductible. And then the second organization, so that's Gun Owners of America, GOA. And then the second one you have is the NSSF. That is the National National Shooting Sports Foundation. They are interesting because they are a 501c6. And so one of the things as a 501c6 is a lot of your members are usually businesses, because a 501c6, I'm so used to saying 501c3, a 501c6 has members that help if businesses growing. One of the prime examples is that of a business chamber, right? You live in Indianapolis, you have the Indianapolis business commerce or commerce of business and things like that, and so your nonprofit or your business pays into the chamber so that they can ideally advocate for the things that are best for the community's businesses. That's one of the prime examples. And so they have 8,000 members across the United States. I'm inclined to believe, honestly, that the NSSR, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, I get a feeling that they are going to be the one. They have an 18-person board, unlike the NRA, which had an unmanageable 49-person board. When I found out the NRA had a 49-person voting board, I was like, this is ridiculous. It's even for the biggest nonprofits, why do you have 49 people? You need to cap that thing at like 18 at most. So they have an 18-person board, 22% more volunteers than that of the NRA. They use volunteers. Gun Owners of America does not use volunteers. I think that is actually a detriment. One of the advantages of using volunteers is an exchange of ideas, an exchange of thoughts. And so you can really get a good buzz in a community by having volunteers. I think that is a detriment to the GOA, Gun Owners of America. And I'd be surprised to see them kind of become the one. But that's just some insights. I think the NRA, as they go down, you're going to see other nonprofits take their space. And so you heard it here first. Back when I was in high school, I interned with the Charlotte Observer. The Charlotte Observer is a newspaper in Charlotte, North Carolina. They cover a large portion of North Carolina and a little bit of South Carolina, although South Carolina has their own newspapers. And I was a senior in high school, and one of the things is they paired me with another writer that was there at the Observer, and his name was Richard Rubin. And he was a phenomenal person. It was his first time ever having an intern. We're honestly talking 18 years ago. It was that long. But he went on and he kept working at the Charlotte Observer. And then eventually he ended up going to the Washington Journal. And he's there now to this day. He's a tax policy reporter, does some of their he just does taxes. Where when he was in Charlotte at the Observer, he did local government, transportation, The first time I ever met the mayor was because of him, because he said, hey, I'm going to a city council meeting. I want you to come to the city council meeting with me. You can meet the mayor of Charlotte, who eventually ended up becoming a governor. And so I was interning with this guy, Richard Rubin. And one of the things, just being around him as he's doing, I mean, he's not doing anything super wild when he's working at the Observer. He's doing like local government, local transportation things. And over time, I just remember, to one degree or another, basically hearing him talk about how he would say, just report the facts. Talk about the facts. He wasn't an opinionist. He didn't do columns or anything like that. But he would do a really good job of really hammering, hey, this is what's happening. And these are some of the things that are going on in your local government. And so over time, I really just translated a lot of what he said to just talk about the facts. And look, I do opinions here at the Nonprofit Insider. But there is an aspect to knowing what's happening and talking about what you know. It's the reason why this is not the astronomy insider podcast, right? I don't know about astronomy. I don't talk about quilt weaving or how to do home remodels. You know, I was in a car with my girlfriend the other day, like a week ago, and she was like, she looked up in the car, out of the car, and she said, oh, is that a Ryan? Looks like Ryan's belt. I know nothing about those types of subjects, so I don't talk about it. But one thing I do know is nonprofits. And there are many aspects to the nonprofit space that allow me the ability to dive into topics or subjects that can be really, really tough. One of those things is Israel and Palestine. There are many aspects to Israel, Palestine, the Middle East, Gaza, that are wrapped not just in humanitarian conflict, war, politics, money, power, but religion. I mean, you're talking about something that is deep and not just the United States, but this is one of the most talked about subjects in the world, right? If you go to someone and you say, hey, let's talk about Israel or Palestine, they'd rather talk about anything else, right? You know, let's talk about Donald Trump, and he's controversial. Let's talk about abortion. And for a lot of people, that is controversial, not for me. But there are many aspects to Israel and Palestine that are really tough to discuss. And you have to be precise sometimes because there are a lot of things that come with it. And when it comes to this subject, it's probably the most complex geopolitical subject in the world. So I don't know as much as others when it comes to this particular sphere or this particular topic. It involves strong emotions, and it's a subject that it's simply we can't simplify it in a 10-minute segment here on the Nonprofit Insider Podcast, because there's a lot of it I don't know. But if it's one thing I do know, it's nonprofit. And 3 weeks ago, a nonprofit jumped to the top of the news outlet across the world. And that nonprofit was World Central Kitchen. And I want to talk about that here. Listen, brace with me here. I'm going to talk about this in a slightly fast and yet short type of fashion, because there are a lot of things to this. If you haven't heard about World Central Kitchen, you could just type it up. A lot of people have, if you just watch the news. Honestly, if you're on Instagram, social media, there are a lot of people that are talking about this subject, because they're about, I think, 6 months in now to, I said 6 months? I think it's like 6, 7, 8 months since the Hamas-led attack in Israel. And since then, Israel has gone on a pretty strong aggressive aspect to many, many aspects to that particular attack. I think last I checked, 34,000 Palestinian civilians have passed away. I mean, it's just getting a lot of attention, and rightfully so. And it was about 3 weeks ago that 7 aid workers that were a part of World Central Kitchen passed away. And it's been a hot topic where a lot of people were saying the attacks were intentional. Israel saying the attacks were not intentional. That part, that's not what I'm interested in talking about, because I can't talk about that anyway. That's for the politics and the higher ups and the investigators at that world UN level to discuss and figure out. But I do want to talk about World Central Kitchen because, and I'm going to build a bridge here. So listen, I'm on one side of this particular land. I'm going to build a bridge to the other side of this land. I'm going to use World Central Kitchen as that because I want to profile them. And let's start from the beginning. World Central Kitchen was started in 2010 by Jose Andreas. And they started in 2010, but they had a ruling year in 2012. That's the year where the IRS says, okay, you're official, you're good, you are now a nonprofit. But I'm sure for those 2 years prior, they were getting all their ducks in a row. Since they started in 2015, they've had, for my money, and I haven't done this super long, and I haven't followed the tracks of every single, you know, nonprofit from start to where they are now. But they've had one of the most impressive 15-year rises that you'll probably see in the nonprofit space. In 2022, according to their most recent 990 report, they had $518 million in contributions and grants that year. That is unreal. To go from starting a nonprofit to 15 years later, having $500 million, that is not the case for a lot of nonprofits. So whenever I'm on Instagram, people are like, start your nonprofit today. That's like being LeBron James. That's like coming out of high school and you just never stop. And so they've had an amazing rise in terms of funding and money. And they're based out of Washington, D.C. That's important. We'll come back to that here in a little bit. They're based out of Washington, D.C., and they have over 7,500 volunteers. Again, an impressive number. And I'm sure they have volunteers all over the globe because obviously they're doing work in the Middle East and things like that. 7,500 volunteers, 94 employees at $9 million. That's their salary. If you look at their salary count, $9 million goes to employees. They have Aaron Gore is their CEO, who just became their CEO. I think it was like within the last year, if I'm not mistaken. According to their 990, she was serving as the interim before that. And 4 years before, she was serving as the director of philanthropy. She's making $240,000 a year, according to their 2022 990 report. So even their numbers, I mean, their CEO is not making a whole lot, but their employees collectively actually are making a whole lot. I mean, it, again, just from the outside looking in, unlike the Russell Wilson Foundation, the money looks really decent. They look like they've set themselves up for some really good success. I want to read the mission statement for you all of World Central Kitchen. Their mission statement, and this is on their 990, so I got it from there, not their website, says, and I quote, World Central Kitchen is first, maybe it's over here, World Central Kitchen, I got to make sure I can read here. World Central Kitchen is first to the front lines, providing meals in response to humanitarian, climate, and community crises, and building resilient food systems with locally led solutions. So that's their mission statement if you look at their tax report. They are 501c3, so they do allow tax deductions. I would imagine if we look at their next tax return this time next year, I bet they have an impressive growth. I hate to say it, but when international aid workers become a part of the battlefield, you're going to get a lot of donations. So I bet they're going to see a rise in the amount of money that comes to them. Rest in peace to those 7 workers, because that's when you're going to a lot of these places, even depending on how you feel, you're trying to provide help to a lot of folks. And that's just not what you want. I want to talk about the founder, Jose Andreas. He is a celebrity chef. And one of the things prior to this attack a couple of weeks ago, I'd never heard of Jose Andreas. If you all watch like international cooking shows, maybe you've heard of him. I had never heard of him. but he's a celebrity chef. Born in Spain in 1969, he moved to the U.S. in the 1990s, back when he was like 21, 22 years old. And since that time, also like the organization, he's had an amazing rise to the top. He moved to the U.S. in the 1990s. Last I checked, I checked just last week, he had 30 different restaurants. I mean, a bunch of restaurants. He's had a bunch of awards. Buku accolades. He is someone that is very well known. So the food, obviously, he must make really good food. When you think of celebrity chef, you know, you could think of those celebrity chefs out there. He is definitely one of those people. He decided to start a nonprofit. And in addition to that, he is the founder of the Global Food Institution, which is in George Washington University. Again, D.C. We'll talk about some more D.C. stuff in a little bit. And he's a professor there as well. I mean, shoot, if I'm going to have an institute named after me or founded, I'm going to be teaching there as well. So George Washington University is obviously is a well-known university that exists out there. He's got honorary degrees from Harvard and a whole bunch of other places. Yes, it's clear he has close ties to power. He has close ties to money. He has close ties to educational institutions, and he's got prestige. And he's got prestige. One of the things is I saw that in 2015, he won the National Humanities Medal. So I said, oh, let me look up. How many people have had that since that thing was started back in 2007, 2008? He's up there with some famous names like James Patterson. He's won it. Prison University Project. They've won this award. I saw that John Templeton Foundation, they're based out of Philadelphia, that's how I know them, they won it. Eli Weissel, you may know him, a Holocaust survivor turned writer. These are some really big names, and he's up there as someone who, when it comes to humanitarian work and humanities, he's getting recognized at the highest levels. And look, going back to what I said at the beginning, this is a tough subject. There are a lot of things to it. But I think there's two takeaways. And I want to wrap it up like this. The first takeaway, as I said with the previous segment with the NRA, nonprofit are an intricate part of society, not just in the United States, but to the international community. And this is a 501c3. They are based, again, out of Washington, D.C., started in 2010, ruling year of 2012, and yet they are on the international stage for things I'm sure they would, none of us would want to have some of our employees or volunteers killed in the process when you're talking about something like war. But they are in the international sphere. That is the power of the 501c organization, at least within the way the United States does their nonprofits. That's the first thing. Nonprofits are just that integral that they will make headlines for all types of reasons. And the second piece is that when it comes to nonprofits, at the highest level, nonprofits can be power brokers. At the highest level, nonprofits can be power brokers. And like I said, I'd never even heard of this organization, and yet they're everywhere. And it's clear the founder, Jose Andreas, he's put himself in a position to make a lot of connections with people that are also power brokers. From what I understand, he is close with Obama, Michelle and Barack Obama, and he's close with a lot of other politicians. He's probably one of those few nonprofit people that if he called his local senator, I'm not sure if he lives in like New York or something like that, or if he's even a U.S. citizen. I didn't see that. But let's just say he lives in, just because it's the first name that comes to my mind, let's say he lives in Kentucky, right? Mitch McConnell, he's conservative, but let's say he lives in Kentucky. If he says, hey, I want to call with Mitch McConnell, he's probably going to pick it up. Or if he lives in Nevada and he's like, hey, I want to get on a call, or New York, that's another one. If he lives in New York, he says, hey, he gets a phone call, or he calls the office of Chuck Schumer, chances are Chuck Schumer is going to take that call. And there are not a lot of nonprofits that can say, hey, I want to talk to my senator one-on-one for 15 minutes. Let me do it. He is one of those people. I can tell you right now, if one of these senators gets a call and it's him on the other line, especially with the most recent events, they're picking up the fucking phone call. They're picking up the phone call. I can guarantee that. And so nonprofits have a lot more power than you realize. It's the reason why more and more people are getting into this space, because you feel like you have the ability to make change at some of the highest levels, and you can be in close proximity to a lot of those different aspects of money, power, education, decision making, and influence. And yet you don't have to be in business or government directly to do it. All right, listen, let's go ahead and get out of here. That was, whoo-wee. When you have some like hardcore subjects like World Central Kitchen, Israel, Palestine, the NRA, you need something a little bit lighter. And this, funny enough, is lighter, but not honestly by a whole lot. I was in the library not long ago. I picked up the book by Megan Fox, Pretty Boys Are Poisonous. It's a collection of poems. The book is pretty darn good. It's pretty darn good. And I was listening to Fresh Air, NPR's Fresh Air. And I don't really get a chance to listen to a lot of the longer NPR pieces. Usually I'm listening to the ones that are like 13 minutes or less. But a friend sent this over to me and said, hey, I think you would really, really like this. I said, all right, let me listen to this. There's an author by the name of Amanda Montell, and she has a new book coming out. It's called The Age of Magical Overthinking. And so a friend sent this over to me. Shout out to you, Nicole, and said, hey, I think you should listen to this episode. And I devoured the 40 minutes. It was a very, very good thing. And one of the things in this interview is she's talking about how we can use all types of cult-related words or magical thinking in ways that are not necessarily to the best advantage of us as humans, individually or as a society. And one example she gives or provides is the fact that how she says one of the first real celebrity presidents was Ronald Reagan, and how he kind of was, you know, former actor, he rode the horse, he had the white hat, he had all the things that kind of came with him and his bravado, if you will, like his stature, and how he became a celebrity president, and how in the 80s, more and more United States citizens or people in the U.S. really started turning towards celebrities for leadership, where even if we had a small community, let's say we lived in a tribe of 200 people, 150 people, right? The people that you usually looked up to were your leaders, because they maybe led you in safety or resources and things like that. But now we have a lot of celebrities that kind of are celebrities, and they're like, well, I mean, their accomplishments don't necessarily make them leaders, but we kind of looked at them as leaders and all the things that come with that. And look, I know for a fact, when it comes to Megan Fox, she's an attractive person, right? She's an attractive woman. I can obviously look at her and go, oh, wow. She's easy on the eyes to look at. But I've never been one of those people that is like, oh, Megan Fox, like, I kind of want to know her or like follow her or know what she's doing. And so when I'll be honest, I was guilty. When I heard she had a book coming out, I was like, eh, you know, she has a book coming out. Like, is it good? I don't know if it's good. Went to the library. They had it on display. I picked it up. The book is freaking good. The book is freaking good. The idea of never judge a book by its cover, that type of thing. If you get a chance, look it up. It's a collection of poems. There's so many poems in here, and I'm going to be honest with you. They are good. I mean, they really hit on a lot of aspects of feelings and dating. I mean, just, I'm looking at this now, and I'm like, shoot, I just passed on one. Page 117, the poem. It sounds so silly, but the poem is 7 lines. I hate men. I hate men. I hate men. That's the whole poem. But in a collection of some of the other pieces, I really, really enjoy it. Page 91, and I quote, Like every woman, they refuse to listen to my words. Instead, they criticize the shape of my mouth as I speak them. I'm like, dang, that's pretty good, actually. So if you get a chance, pick it up. I could talk about it. This is already a long episode. You all want to get out of here and do some stuff. But check out Pretty Boys Are Poisonous by Megan Fox. It's a collection of poems by the actor, the writer, the mother. You all know her. All right, listen, let's go ahead and get out of here. This is a long episode. I ran way over. We talked about a lot of interesting things. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok. Be sure to subscribe to us, because the next episode, I'm going to be talking about the Met Gala and some of the nonprofit ramifications behind it. And that'll be a really interesting one. All right, everyone. Peace out. We'll see you on the next episode.